Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Race and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Race and Lanes podcast. I am your host, Rico Muhammad. I will be joined by my co-host, Chuck Snow, here just real shortly. We also have a special guest on with us tonight. So if you have questions once we open it up, just remember you can press the number one. That puts you in the call queue, and we will get to you as quickly as we possibly can. We're going to begin the show starting off as we normally do, starting off with this week's USDA truck rate report, and there is a lot of fluctuation on this report this week. If you go over to the Facebook Rates and Lanes page with Rico Muhammad, you should see a link for this report there for your viewing pleasure if you would like to go into more in-depth looking into this report. That link is the resource that you want to utilize. It will give you all of the information that we do not cover here. But the things that we want to talk about on this report in particular, we got a couple of markets that are showing outright shortages. Those markets are Southeast Missouri, Southwest Indiana, and Southeast Illinois are both markets that are showing an outright shortage of trucks right now. We have only one market reporting a slight shortage, Delaware, Maryland, and Eastern Shore, Virginia. So those three areas that we named off, those are probably, if you're chasing the spot market right now, those are going to be your areas of where there may be some opportunities to be had because of the volatility and the supply and demand in those markets. You may be able to push that rate per mile just a smidge more higher and put a little bit more towards the bottom line. What we're going to talk about now is the inverse of that. We got a couple of markets that are showing some slight surpluses and outright surpluses. Markets that are showing a slight surplus of trucks is Vidalia District, Georgia, and Southern New Mexico. Those two areas are showing slight surpluses of trucks. So the rate may be starting to get a little bit tight there in favor of the brokers. And two markets that are showing outright surpluses of trucks right now, which means the rates may be really suppressed in those markets, Lower Rio Grande Valley, Texas, and Mexico Crossing through Texas. So that will wrap up this week's USDA fruit and vegetable truck rate report. We're going to jump right over without any further ado into this week's DAT trend lines report for the previous week of July 15th through the 21st. Spot market demand and pricing slid again last week, which is common for this point in the summer. Reefer volume continues to lag, which has contributed to lower dry van rates, and declines in the oil field activity have affected flatbed and van freight. So let's take a deeper dive and look and see how this was affecting what the spot market rates were looking like for dry vans. Well, excuse me, before we jump into the dry van spot market rates, we had diesel fuel that went down by 0.3 percentage points. So we're showing a national average of diesel fuel at $3.05 per gallon currently. Now we'll jump over into the rates, spot market rates for dry vans over the previous week. Starting out in the northeastern corridor, we show outbound spot market rates at $1.60 per mile. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the United States, we show outbound spot market dry van rates at $1.93. Moving into the Midwest, we show outbound dry van rates at $2.03. Moving to the south central portion of the United States, we show outbound spot market rates at $1.83 per mile. And coming out of the West Coast, we're showing outbound spot market rates for dry vans at $1.82. Moving over into the flatbed segment of the DAT report, we're showing coming out of the Northeast, outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $2.15 per mile. dropping down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the United States, we show outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at 244. That leads the nation for the average spot market rate. Moving up into the Midwest, we show outbound spot market rates at $2.43 per mile on average. Moving down to the South Central, $2.31 per mile on average coming out of the South Central portion of the United States. And coming out of the West Coast, we show outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $2.02. Moving over to the temperature-controlled or reefer portion of this week's DAT report, spot market rates coming out of the Northeast are showing at $1.78 per mile. Moving down into the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the report, we show outbound spot market rates for reefers at $2.23. Coming out of the Midwest, we show outbound spot market rates at $2.33 per mile. Dropping down to the South Central portion of the United States, we show outbound spot market rates at $2.12, and leading the nation coming out of the West Coast, showing outbound spot market reefer rates at $2.34 per mile. And luckily, this week, we do not have any fluctuations or any changes with the we don't have any new interest, I should say, on the bad broker report, which is always refreshing and good news because we don't like to see that report roll. We haven't added any new interest on that report in quite some time. But with that being said, we're going to go ahead and welcome up and on board with us our co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, how are you this evening?
We're doing well. How are you, Rico?
Doing very well, thank you. Doing very well. What's going on? I thank you once again for covering for me last week. Had some last-minute stuff come up. So how did everything go off, and what's been going on for the past week with you guys up at Traffix?
Well, things are busy, you know, in spite of it being summer. Now we're seeing in certain areas compression of rates, especially out of Canada for the most part. But things overall are busy. There's still a lot of freight out there. In some areas, we have too many trucks chasing too little freight. There's certain areas like that, but overall, it seems to be holding its own fairly well, considering it's getting towards the end of July. So, you know, things are going well. And as far as the show last week, we had a great time, Hank and I, bantering around like, you know, a couple old hens. But we missed you, and I didn't do the DAT report or anything. We got right into it. So I'm glad you did it this week, because some of our listeners really depend on that.
Well, speaking of the DAT report, just kind of from what you're seeing, are you seeing any areas in particular that might present some opportunities for our listeners right now on the spot market? Anything that jumps out to you since you've been doing anything this week?
Nothing more than what you mentioned was pretty. You know, those are the hot areas right now. Southern Illinois is hot right now. You want to stay the heck out of places like Florida. places like that, there's nothing. And South Texas, don't go near them unless somebody's paid you a lot of money or you've got a prearranged backhaul, which I doubt.
Right. Well, with that being said, we don't want to hold and belabor the point. We want to go ahead and welcome on our special guest this week, Mr. Jeff Hall. I'll give you a little bit of background on Jeff. Jeff specializes as a private investigator, specializes in cargo theft in the motor transport sector. So we're going to go ahead and bring Mr. Jeff Hall up and on board with us. Jeff, how are you this evening?
Good, guys. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for coming on board with us. So, Jeff, let me ask you this question starting out right out the gate. And remember, listeners, if you got a question for Jeff Hall, all you have to do is press number one. That puts you in the call queue, and we'll get right to you. So let's kind of go over a mock scenario. Say if, we got a guy that goes. He just picked up a high value load or whatever, and he stops at the truck stop for the evening. But he goes in, takes a shower, comes out, and the whole truck is missing. How should one expect to handle that situation in those types of scenarios?
Sure, Rico. A lot of it has to do with where it's at. I do cargo theft throughout North America, so depending on where something happens, it means a lot. I mean, if it's in Atlanta, there's certain things that apply. If it's in, you know, Dallas, where I'm based, or in California, different things apply. But just as general knowledge, if that comes out, and then the first thing about it, if it's a trucker's first loss, he's going to be shocked. I mean, he's going to be totally shocked if, gosh, did I park it here? And he's kind of start walking around, then he realizes that his rig's been stolen. And, of course, first thing they usually do is contact their dispatcher and inform them. And then, of course, they're advised to call the police to make sure they get a police report. And when we get assigned to a case like that, you have to realize that everything that is shipped is insured. So most of our business comes from insurance companies that insure cargo. Or we might be working on behalf of the broker that brokered the load. We might be working on behalf of the owner of the cargo. There's different. You know, the insurance applies from different areas. But that's how we get involved. And when we go, we do an investigation where we want to go and we want to talk to the driver, get a statement from him, where did he pick up the load, where did he stop, where did he go, when he got the truck stop, what did he do, check with the truck stop to see if there's any CCTV video coverage that covers that area. And in most truck stops where truckers park, it usually doesn't, unless they're parked at the fuel islands, because most truck stops really concentrate their CCTV coverage on the fuel lines for passenger cars and big trucks. But and then a lot of things start into play. What's the commodity? A lot of commodities we know are targeted, especially like the scenarios you're talking about, Rico, that you mentioned frequently happen along the I-85 corridor where things are shipped out of Virginia. A lot of times it's printer cartridges. It could be energy drink, things like that are going to Florida, where a driver might stop in, say, Spartanburg, South Carolina, and that exact same scenario happens. So usually when that happens, we've got a pretty good idea who's involved in it. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I'll let you finish that thought. I got a follow-up question since you mentioned something that kind of took my interest.
On so many of the cases that we have, like you've gone that scenario you just described and I kind of went into, very much on the East Coast is done by an organized crime group, the Cubans, operate out of Hialeah, Florida. They're very accomplished thieves. They do a lot of following. They've done a lot of homework of the shippers, what they ship, and they'll just follow a load once it gets picked up from the shipper. And whenever the opportunity presents itself, in essence, like a driver stopping at a truck stop and parking this rig and going inside for sure, well, that's when they steal the whole rig. They can do it within seconds. So, like I said, when it's on that part of the country, and depending on the commodity, we've just got a pretty good idea that load's probably going to be heading to Florida.
Okay, so my next question was, this because, if it's not being told to you that this is a particular high-value load, or it may not be something that a person may not think is a very high-value load, what are some things that we need to be aware of that are targeted? Just so we kind of have a rule of thumb knowledge on what's the things that people are actually looking to try to steal.
It's a good question, Rico, but my first part of that answer would be anything that's popular under your Christmas tree. big things like on Xboxes, Nintendos, Monster Energy Drink, Red Bull Energy Drink are very, very common things. Loads of tires. Also, you have to kind of look at – you have to remember cargo thieves are very, very good economists. They know what's hot. They know what sells. They know what's in demand. For example, it could be affected by a disaster. Like when we have a hurricane or a storm, what happens? That area of the country starts getting all kinds of business supplies being shipped in. Thieves look for that. So loads of plywood, loads of precious metals, things like that. But there's certain things, like I said, and a lot of times you might have something get stolen. We see this all the time where – they see a sealed load parked either along the street or in a truck stop, and they just steal the load, having no idea what's inside. Well, usually if it's a product that's not real desirable in the secondary market, we'll find that load to be abandoned. Maybe a few cartons taken, but if it's something like one of the best examples is shoes. You know, if it's like Adidas or Nike or name brand athletic shoes, if you've got something like a load of Air Jordans, that's the same as cash on the street. But if you've got something that's got a lot of children's shoes in it and some other items, it could be an FTL, but it might have very little value on the secondary market, so the thieves might take, like I said, a couple of boxes, but you will usually recover the entire load somewhere. It'll be abandoned.
Chuck, you want to jump in here? I got a couple more questions.
Well, can our listeners, how feasible is it for them to have kill switches in their tractors so that there's a secret switch under there that they shut the truck off so that it can't be stolen? Because my experience has been the first truck they take is the one that's hooked up to a trailer, and they can tell if it's loaded, if it's got a seal on it. You know, it's a great idea to, you know, for our listeners, get a really good heavy-duty lock, and I'm talking about one that you can't cut open unless you have a torch, and keep that on your trailer empty or loaded. It's just a good habit. But what about a kill switch? How effective is that?
It's a great idea, but the biggest problem, Chuck, comes in with the human element. I've got a client that has a code that you have to use to start your engine. But there again, it's human nature. What do a lot of drivers do? And I'm not making fun of the drivers or condemning. I'm just stating a fact. What they'll do is they'll have the code, but for convenience sake, they'll write the code down on a piece of paper or a piece of cardboard, and then stick it on the windshield visor. So you just have to, they'll pull it down, they've got it. Well, I mean, it's great that with the convenience, but if a thief gets in there and pulls that down, well, he sees your code, starts your truck, and he steals it. But it's a great idea. It's like so many good things with technology, with the tracking devices, with all these. It's all great, but with everything like that, you have to remember, it has to be monitored. And what we see so often is with large trucking companies with very good intentions, they might have tracking devices on a lot of trailers, but unless they've got somebody assigned in a command center doing 24/7 tracking on all those trailers, it doesn't do a lot of good, because if a trailer gets stolen, it's got a tracking device, a lot of times that information is not accessed for 24, 48 hours, and that's a lot of time to lapse when you're talking about trying to find a load of stolen product.
Yeah, my understanding, you tell me if I'm right, but what I've heard is if it's a hot product, it goes into, you know, if they catch some, you know, if they steal something on Highway 85, Interstate I-85, they've got a warehouse pre-designated. It goes into that warehouse. It's offloaded. They ditch the truck. Is that what goes on for the most part?
In some cases, it does. If a load's targeted and they know what the load is, that's very often the case. But a lot of times, so much of cargo theft is really random. It's all by opportunity. The theft is made, they don't really know what they have, and once they get it, they don't have a buyer. So once they have that product, they might warehouse it for a while. We see this a lot out in California, where California is the number one cargo theft venue in the United States, followed by Dallas, Texas. And, you know, there's like top five I can give you. But when we see a lot of stuff in California, it gets stolen, it gets warehoused. And just like a retailer, they'll warehouse this product, let it cool off for about 6 months before it gets floated up on the secondary market, or they might try to float it on e-market sites. So, but you're right, on some things that are targeted, yes, it's all planned out. And I've even seen quite a few cases along I-85, especially right there in Spartanburg, where an FTL gets stolen, and they'll discard the tractor, separate it, and park the trailer in a place where they can sit back and watch it just to see if there's somebody like me or someone else that's out there trying to find it, and let it sit there for maybe 5 or 6 hours with a tracking device on it to see if anybody shows up trying to look for it. And then if nobody shows up, they grab and they take off.
Interesting. And what is the biggest theft you've ever seen in all the times you've been investigating truck theft?
You know what? Biggest thefts I've ever seen or biggest ones I've ever covered?
Well, covered. Well, first of all, seen. What's the biggest one?
Yeah, let's touch on both of them.
Okay, well, ones involving, like I said, the electronic games, I've had a couple. But probably the one that's probably the most notorious is it happened in all places up in the Pacific Northwest in Seattle, which isn't a heavy cargo theft venue.
Right.
there's a very prolific cargo thief that resides out of Salt Lake City that has associate members, affiliate members in Southern California, that a few years ago I got a call from the King County Sheriff's Office up in Seattle that they had a cargo theft just on the western edge of SeaTac Airport. And right. it was a gaming manufacturer, and it took out like 75 pallets, used equipment that was right next door, like trailers that were there, the box trucks, and broke into the warehouse and cleaned it out. Well, when they called me, they said, "We understand you do a lot of cargo theft. What's it sound like to you?" And I said, "Well, it sounds like a Cuban job to me." And they sent me a video, and I watched it. And when I started watching it, the reason I thought it had Cuban involvement is because they had a ladder that they brought with them, the aluminum ladder, and put it up on a trailer to access the roof to get the skylight to defeat the alarm system. But as the guy was going up there, they started checking the doors and found out the doors weren't even locked. Somebody neglected to lock the doors. So they just opened the doors, went inside, and cleaned the place out. Well, that was the first time. That's about 5 years ago. And then we tracked that product. I had cargo theft investigators with the task force down in California. We found one of our trailers down there. And then an informant said, "Hey, are you missing some games from Washington?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, they're down here." Well, advance about 3 years, and again, we had a rash of thefts in Seattle with like 9 different trailers taken, but it was all not real valuable product, like fishing boots, some nuts, some cheap furniture. Well, some of that product ended up down in Southern California, so we knew the same guy was involved. Well, a week after these 9 different trailers and containers were stolen, they had a big 4PL up in Seattle where they took a large electronics retail store's product.
Right.
And then they broke in and they marked 9 different containers and trailers with orange paint, what they were going to steal. Then they came back later, busted down the fence. And the way the configuration of this facility was, the guard could not see what was going on or even hear what was going on. They had a lookout watching him, and they compromised the fence. And again, they got 5 of the marked container trailers out there, but they got the 6th hung up on the fence. So in essence, what they ended up with, they had over $1 million of the products of electronics. So I got called, went up there, and met with the young task force. These guys have been very good friends. And I told them, I said, "Look, I don't want to talk to any of you guys." And they said, "Jeff, trust us. We're used to dealing with tweakers and Hans. We don't think at all about organized crime cargo theft." And I said, "Well, I can tell you who did this." And I had pictures of the guys. And I said that these are the guys that did it. And so one of the detectives, and I said, "There's a truck stop very close by here called the Mustard Seed." And I said, "I can't believe at the hour they had in proximity, they did not use this as a base of operations." So the detective went there the next day, and he went inside, started reviewing video. Sure enough, all 5 of our suspects were on video inside that place. So once we had that, these guys bought into it. And these guys couldn't have been more just great bunch of young guys that worked their butts off in this case. And we got a break early on the case. And how we normally go about a case like this is the first thing we do is, of course, we want to analyze the product. What's out there? What are we looking for? Get that out as much as we can. So the first thing to do is start recovering stolen equipment. So you go to the recovery site and canvas the area, look for video, talk to witnesses, anything. Well, about 3 days into the case, we got a great tip that I think it happened on a Sunday. We get a call on a Tuesday that a woman called up and said, "I didn't know that this particular retail store uses this private storage facility for the overstock." So, "Well, what are you talking about?" So then she tells the police detective that thinks as well, I saw 5 Latino guys that were in a Ryder truck offloading all this new product into a storage facility. We're like, "Oh, okay." So we went to the facility, found there was the unit next to one that she was talking about. If you guys know that these storage units don't go all the way to the walls don't go all the way to the ceiling. So we got inside the one next door, looked over. The detective was kind of tall guy, took a picture. It was loaded floor to ceiling with our products. So then we got a pole camera. Had one mounted that afternoon, started doing surveillance, saw vehicles show up, followed them, put tracking devices on them. And so within 9 days, we knew everything, everywhere they went, and we brought these guys down. So we recovered all that product, got it back, and caught the bad guy. So that was one of the most successful cases we've probably ever had. And but the kicker in this thing is they were trying to put a terrorist hold on this guy. He's a Mexican national, but the guy had such a good bail bondsman, he was able to finagle and get released before the paperwork could be submitted. Huh. So he's still out there doing the same thing. And so anytime I have a theft in California, I know he's involved just because of the MO. And we have informants that'll say, yeah, he's got that product. But they're very good. They've operated very, very simple. A lot of places very simple. If they see a load that's parked on the street that's maybe a yard's full and the driver's parked his rig on the street, then they'll steal that. And sometimes they get lucky, and sometimes they get, you know, a load that's not much value. But right. That's probably the biggest case. And but you know, there's been ones out there where, probably the biggest loss I've ever experienced was we had $8 million cell phone loss of a load going from Brea, California to the East Coast, and it was stolen in Milan, New Mexico. $8 million.
$8 million
of cell phones. Yeah.
Whoa. One load. So tell me something. I'm dumbfounded because I've only been in this business for 45 years. Would
sure.
they not have extra security or something on a load of that value?
You know, Chuck, you're asking great questions, and the you too, Rico. But the truth of the matter is, what happened on this is that this is a large trucking company, and you can, you know, with your situation in traffic, you'll be able to sympathize with this. What happens? They get a call, and they have no power in that area, so they're like,
right.
"Gee, what are we going to do?" They want to turn the load. They don't want to turn those loads. And they had three trailers simultaneously going out of Brea. From the same company. So they
right.
broke her out to three different trucking companies. And we still don't know how, of the three that went out, two of them had mock-up product. The other one had the $8 million of phones in it. We still don't know to this day how they knew to follow the one that had the product, not the markup. And it was a single driver with $100,000 of cargo liability insurance, carrying an $8 million load cross-country. Well, of course, the driver suspected initially, but when this happened, I get a call at 3 in the morning. They said, we need you out in Milan, New Mexico with a Albuquerque, met my client out in Milan, which is, if you ever saw the movie Cars, the cartoon version, that's Milan, New Mexico. That's Radiator Springs. Nice little town that just has a couple of truck stops. And
right.
where this truck stop, the truck stop that got defected was on the southeast quadrant of I-40 and this cross street. Well, when I flew out there, you know, we checked the cameras, and they had great cameras that covered the passenger fuel islands and the gas truck islands. And then I talked to the driver. He said, yeah, I got here. I pulled in. I got gas. And I went around parked for about 15 minutes to back when I came inside. Well, we had video coverage that verified everything he said. We had the receipt that shows exactly what time he got there. And we started watching. Sure enough, we see him pull in, go park. When he pulls in, we see three chase vehicles, a white van and two sedans. And once he goes inside, we see two guys or Cubans come in behind him, and they walk around the store as he's getting a shower pass, and as soon as he gets the pass and goes into the shower, you know, they've got eyeballs on him, they make the call, and bingo, that outside somebody boosts that load and they take off. What's kind of a funny thing about that is when that happened, the chief police out there is one of the greatest guys I've ever worked with, smart guy, and he said, you can use my office as a command center. We've got a U.S. magistrate right next door from these search warrants. I said, we need search warrants on that phone right there, because as we were watching the camera, I said, one of those guys just made a phone call. We need to find out who he called. And I said, who's your FBI agent here? And he said, I have no idea. So who's got jurisdiction here? And he goes, I have no idea. So we found out that Gallup had jurisdiction. And so I called the agent out there, and he's a young guy, 25-year-old agent. I asked him, I said, hey, you know, my name is Jeff Hall. I'm a private detective. I did cargo theft. We had an FTL of $8 million load of phones. So he goes, whoa, buddy. He goes, whoa. Because I didn't even know what you're talking about. What are you talking about, an FTL? I said, a full trailer load of phones. So when I finally explained to him, he goes, well, I've never handled a cargo theft in my life. I don't know what I can do for you. I said, well, let me give you a scenario. We're in New Mexico. So we've got Alamogordo. We've got the research lab, White Sands. So this whole state's lit up like a Christmas tree. The government satellite surveillance. And he goes, yeah. I said, so since we know the exact time and date of our theft, and we know the exact lawns and lats that theft, is it that all been recorded? Could we just contact the military and go back and see our truck? Because I can tell you, if it's going east, I know it's going to Miami. If it went back
right.
west, I know it's going back to California. And he started laughing. He goes, Jesus Christ, that's some Jack Bauer shit. And I said, well, in my opinion, he said, that, you know, they said, we've got that capability. But to make a long story short, he checked, you know, he was a good guy, checked with him. They checked with Washington, D.C., and they said that unless that it's a matter of mass security, the military won't cooperate with domestic law enforcement.
Right.
So anyway, we ended up finding out it did go back to California, and then about 3 months later, those phones we found them being for sale. I think at a college over on the East Coast and started making some recoveries.
And how much of them did you end up recovering?
We found a kid that got him through his dad down in Florida. He was going to a business school up in Rhode Island, and we ended up getting back quite a few of them. But, with 8 million, there was a lot of them out there, but we still got back a small recovery on that. But they'd shipped a lot of those out of the country.
Now, I got to ask you a question. I'm up in Canada, but I remember a law that was on the books. Maybe it's no longer there, and it was called tampering with an interstate load. And my understanding was it wasn't as serious as murder, but it was up with kidnapping and armed robbery at one point. Does that law, is it still on the books? Do they prosecute under that law anymore? What's going on with that?
Not I've ever seen it, but I did quite a bit of work up in your neck of the woods, Chuck. I mean, the people listening, Mississauga is the cargo theft capital of Canada. That's where all the shipping.
I think it's
on.
The capital. If I'm not mistaken, it beat Mississauga or Peel region beat your areas. It's the number one, and I could be wrong, but I think it's the number one cargo theft area of North America.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
so,
in
the last year it has. And the reason, just so the listeners know, when I refer to Southern California, which I'm out there all the time, one of our main offices out there, is that the reason that LA is so big is because you've got the ports of LA and Long Beach sit side by side in San Pedro. And you got 13 million containers that come in there of every kind of commodity, from perishables to electronics to clothing, anything. And then once it lands, it gets shipped either by rail or by truck to parts throughout the United States. But Mississauga, if you've ever been up there, Chuck, is in that area. It's just so concentrated with so much of business park, industrial park. It's humongous. And I laughed. I was up there last month. When you look at Mississauga, you see the skyline. You're going, well, God, that's got to be Toronto. No, it's not. That's Mississauga. I mean, it's its own city. And it's Chuck knows what I'm talking about. And it's very impressive. The thefts that I've had up there a lot over the last few years have been a lot of shoe thefts from a large shoe manufacturer that we, figure out what was going on with that. They've been followed. But I see every kind of commodity from precious metals to food, everything, it gets stolen in Mississauga.
Yeah,
but to ask you a question,
nastier.
On that law, Chuck, I've never seen that applied. I think a lot of times cargo theft does not get the attention that we'd like for it to, because it's not a crime against a person. And
right.
A lot of times, sadly to say, is a large cargo theft, even though it might be a high dollar value, is treated like it's no more valuable than a pair of shoes. It all depends on the attitude of the law enforcement that it occurs in.
I would presume that if it's in an area like, let's say, Chicago or New York City or Miami, or Dallas even, or, any of these big cities where the police have an awful lot of, they've got violent crimes to deal with, murders and all sorts of things like that. And I guess these things because nobody's hurt, I guess they just the police have to take a secondary approach because they're limited with manpower too, I guess.
Well, especially, and also just to kind of give you an overview of cargo theft in the United States, there's only about 100 law enforcement officers that are trained in the nuances of cargo theft. You've got three different cargo theft task force in LA. You've got LA City, which has an acronym of the Bad Cats. And you've got what's called the CTIP, which is the California Highway Patrol, which is a cargo theft interdiction program. And then you've got the county, LA County, which is called the Cargo Cats. So that you've got more concentration of cargo theft specialists in California than around the country. Then you move east and you don't have another cargo theft task force to get Chicago, which is Illinois State Police, and they just about a month ago disbanded that unit because they want to pull those investigators off on to handle more violent crime. Then you get into Memphis, Tennessee, and you've got a cargo theft task force. Then you've got where you're at, Rico, and in Georgia with the NIC, or not NIC, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, GBI. These guys do a great job because you got so much stuff leaving the state of Florida and also going into the state of Florida. And then, of course, Atlanta is a large cargo theft venue in itself. And then you've got the FBI Miami-Dade Cargo Theft Task Force down in Miami. And that's it. I mean, you've got very few detectives in the country, other than those places I mentioned, that are trained to nuance the cargo theft. So you have a lot like a cargo theft in Philadelphia or St. Louis or Kansas City or Indianapolis. You just don't have detectives that are trained in the nuances of that type of theft.
Wow. That, you know, that's kind of disheartening because, as Rico and I have talked a lot about on this show, every trucking company in North America is battling increased insurance costs and less coverage.
Sure.
And one of the many the insurance companies are losing money, and it's not just on on incidents where people are hurt or they're killed. It's also because cargo theft is out of control, but not a whole lot. It doesn't seem, anyways, that a whole lot is being done to prevent it or control it. It's kind of disheartening.
Well, and I think that's where insurance companies play such a fact. People have to understand that our entire industry of really battling cargo theft is fueled by insurance companies, insurance company money. Insurance companies pay where before somebody calls in and says, hey, I just had my truck stolen, and I was carrying $500,000 worth of Nike shoes. Well, the insurance company just isn't going to say, okay, well, let me write you out a check. They want to know, all right, we want to investigate what happened here. Who's the shipper? Who was the carrier? How was the
right.
load handled? Who brokered? All that needs to be investigated before they're going to settle a claim. And large insurance companies that write cargo theft insurance understand what we've just been talking about, that there might be a slow police response. So that's why they understand the importance of a private investigator to get them involved to handle the case. Make sure that it's got the proper police attention. Make sure BOLO goes out. Check with your informants because they know that there's a very, very select few of us that do this, that we've been doing it for years, and we've got resources. We've got contacts. But there's not a person that handles cargo theft in the United States that I don't know is a good friend because we work together and go to conferences together like Chuck was talking about a while ago. And you share this information, and there's never been a time. You have to remember, the private sector getting involved in cargo theft is a relatively new industry that didn't really start until about the mid-90s. So
right.
It's not been around that long. But when it first started out, there was a very much of a reluctance between police sharing information with the private sector. But because of all the successes we've had and the more people gotten together with these conferences like that are held throughout the country, the people involved in cargo theft, the group has never been more cohesive than it is now, where people exchange information and the people in LA know the people in Florida, the people in Chicago, the people in Memphis, and everybody that's involved in the industry knows one another, and including the people up in I know the people of Peel Regional and York Region. I've been up there, and those guys have been to our conferences. We've had them down to ours, so we have a great relationship with those guys as well.
Now, are you finding that a lot of your freight ends up leaving United States, stuffed on containers, going to Eastern Europe and places like that? Do you find a lot of that?
Not a lot, but we're seeing an increase in that. And most of the stuff, I keep referring back to California because we have so many thefts out there. But what we find out there, usually when there's a theft in California, because of the involvement of the three different task forces, there's a lot of informants out there. A lot of detectives have informants. So it's very rare when something gets stolen out there, whether it's a load of HP computers or, whether it's a load of Adidas shoes, whatever, we'll know about it. Some informants can say, hey, you guys missed a load of Adidas shoes. We'll go, yeah, matter of fact, we are. Or, hey, are you guys missing some modems? We'll say, yeah. Because the only way the thieves can make money, remember, it's costing almost nothing to steal these loads. So any
right.
amount of money they're going to get is 100% profit. But they've got to sell it. Well, you just can't go up to a lot of legitimate businesses to try to sell them stolen products. So there's an underground, a secondary market that exists out there that informants know about. So it's very rare if something gets stolen we don't at least get to know about. And that's where the game starts to play, to make a buy, make sure it's our product. Can we identify it? Is it serialized? Can we match serial numbers? And then, try to work up and make a bigger buy. So there's a lot of things that go into that. But in other areas, it's a little bit different. We see – the reason I'm kind of hesitating here is because where we're seeing a lot of stuff leaving the country, Chuck, is in the new method of the week anymore. What we're seeing a lot of anymore is fraud theft through the Internet. I think the load I talked to you about that we worked on together, you guys can
right.
load up on your load board. Well, in the United States, we have three major load boards, Get Loaded, DAT360, and truckstock.com.
Right.
If it goes on one, it goes on all three simultaneously. And while we had a number of years going back in the early, like 2011, we started to see a lot of fictitious pickup where thieves are very smart. They'd look up on the load and if they saw there was a an FTL going coast to coast and it called for team drivers, and to eliminate unqualified carriers, they'd say, we need a $250,000 cargo liability insurance to pick up this load. Well, thieves look then and go, what's that telling? Team driver.
That tells them that, load of computers.
Well, it's a high-value load. Doesn't matter if it's,
yep.
if it's tires, computers, or a load of blue jeans. They know it's high-value. So what they do, they steal the identity of another trucker, then submit that to the carrier. The carrier didn't do a real good job in due diligence. They'd get, then they'd receive the broker's package that's got all the necessary paperwork to pick up the load. They'd show up, pick it up. On a Friday, take off. Come Tuesday, the consignee back on the East Coast say, hey, where's my load? And said, well, hell, I don't know. Chuck and Rico picks up on Friday. And they start trying to contact all Chuck and Rico's phone numbers, fax numbers, email, and find out it's all bogus. Now, we did some things where we put up some loads. We caught, and after a lot of years, we finally caught these, a lot of these guys. Some of that changed. Now they're doing a lot with T-check scams. We're seeing a lot now also with what we call redirected freight, where they're and this is where a lot of we're getting stuff from the Russians and people from out of the country will use phishing and spoofing to carriers, to last mile carriers, and get information on loads and then redirect that freight and steal it. And we're seeing a lot of that product going out of the country. We just had one last month where some of that product was being sold over in Turkey. And we know that with these Russians and Ukrainians that are involved in this, they're very smart, they're very organized. And we're seeing a lot of that influence right now. Within, and that's all pretty much started in mass since January of 2019.
You know, it's funny. If any of us did anything like that over in those countries, we'd either be before a firing line or we'd be locked in the hoosegow for decades. And these guys come over here from all over the world, over to North America, and they can operate with them, you know, without having to worry. It's really an unfair disadvantage being a motor carrier of any size, whether you're one truck or 5,000 trucks. You really you've got to just take every precaution you can that's available to you.
Well, it goes back to something you said a while ago, and I was going to chime in. There's a good buddy of mine that's a security investigator for one of the large trucking companies, and he's got a very, very simple theory, and it's genius and it's simplicity. He goes, I want my truck or my yard just to be more secure than the guy that's parked next to me or has a yard next door to mine. And it's a great credo. If your truck has more security on it than the one parked next to you, which one are they going to try to steal?
Of course. The one with the least amount of security. Yep.
Exactly. I mean, it's a very simple.
Don't make it easy
very,
for
very
them.
True. But to kind of piggyback on what you just said, one of the biggest problems for years is the laws on cargo theft vary from state to state. And this is where on this T-check scam, where what will happen is a guy will steal identity, a guy picks up a load, he'll call the broker, say, hey, I got your load. And then they'll, as you well know, you guys are, the traffic supervisor gets this all the time, because, well, I need some money. I've got a maintenance problem, or I need some gas. So you'll send them a T-check or a comcheck. And they're very smart about this, because we've had a rash of these over the last few years. We've got a very big case going on out in Las Vegas right now. But the problem is they know that the threshold between a felony and a misdemeanor in the state of Georgia, where Rico's at, I think, is $1,400. So they're never going to get an advance over $1,400, because, hell, if it's $1,200 or $1,100, the law enforcement doesn't care. They're not going to get all excited about a $1,100 fuel charge theft. And then they're very smart. They might do $800 in Illinois, $900 in Nevada, $600 in Indiana. But when you look at this cumulative, it comes into thousands and thousands of dollars, because they're doing this against a lot of your larger brokers throughout the North America. And it's become very, very big, but it's hard to get law enforcement involved, because what we've finally had to do is say, okay, we know that here's all the cases these guys have done, and when these happen, we just say, make sure you get a police report. Like out in Vegas, we had this, so this guy's been hitting a lot. So if it happened in Henderson, got to get a police report in Henderson. It happened in North Las Vegas, get a police report in North Las Vegas. Every venue that happens, get a police report, put those all together, then go to a detective and, where the majority of them handles and try to get their attention. And we've had quite a bit of success going that route. But it's a lot of work. We do a lot of negotiating. I mean, a lot of times we'll get the on some of these cases, the law enforcement will say, well, that's not really a criminal thing. That's a civil matter. We go, well, it's got civil components, but it's also got criminal components too. So we have to sell and say, hey, here's – and like Chuck made a great point a while ago that it's forgotten and why I hate theft so much, why I've kind of dedicated my life to doing this, is that you take a trucker. He gets his truck stolen, his rig. Say it's both tractor and trailer. And it disappears for 3 or 4 months. That can bankrupt a guy. He can lose his house. He has no payments.
Oh,
he has
yeah.
no income. I mean, it's just devastating.
Yeah. You know, especially right now, freight rates are down compared to where they were. Expenses are up. Your insurance automatically, when you've had a truck theft on your record, your insurance rate goes up. It very easily will bankrupt them. And I don't think that a lot of people out there realize the risk they have when they take their truck and they pick up a load and they park it, you know, and they, like Rico said, they go in for a shower. I think, you know, it's pretty innocent. Everybody needs a shower, and unfortunately we have to shower at truck stops when we're on the road, and there's no security at a lot of – most truck stops do not have security, like actual security. And, you know, they may have a guard driving around the car, but they don't know, or even walking around. But, you know, we all know that the crooks are pretty smart, and they wait till the guard's gone away. And these guys can steal a truck in a matter of minutes if there's no, you know, kill switch or dead man switch on it somewhere. And, you know, there you go. You're bankrupt. It's real easy.
Well, but even – well, you're right. But even a good car thief, you know, I mean, the most popular – tractor steals a Freightliner because you've got a set of keys. I think what 7 keys open up every Freightliner. So if the thief's got
right.
a master set of those keys, hell, he could be standing there as a guard looking at him, and that guy doesn't know he's not the driver. So you know what?
Yeah.
A lot of times, cargo theft happens a lot because people a lot of times are where they belong, or that's why a lot of times people say, well, how come my trailer hasn't been recovered? How come my container hasn't been recovered? Very simple reason, because it's probably parked in a place where it kind of belongs. And it's only after a few weeks where
right.
somebody may, you know, it's funny, that container's been there for 3 weeks, and they call the police, they come out and run the plate, and they find out it's stolen. So there's a lot of times it's – the trucking industry is a very casually based business. And I hear a lot of times people complain about dock workers. Like, well, God, couldn't that guy tell that guy, that the papers weren't accurate, or, you know, that the BOL said that Chuck's trucking is going to come and pick it up, but it's actually Rico's trucking, wouldn't that a red flag? A dock worker doesn't care if they've got the proper paperwork, and it's the end of the day, and they've got one load going to Findlay, Ohio, and they know that that's back there, and then the guy says, yeah, I'm here to pick up the load from Findlay, Ohio. Why are you going to question the guy? Hell, it's
yep.
the only load you got left in the warehouse. These guys aren't security guys. They make their money by moving freight. So that's why, as I said, it's been a casual business that the thieves have. They're very smart, and they've kind of preyed on that, knowing that they know the right buzzwords. They know what is accepted and what's not. And they're very, very good at it.
Well, you know what? It's funny. On that note, there's two things that I started to do years ago. And one of them was educating my shippers, my customers, because I had customers where they shipped the wrong loads, or they, you know, somebody came in and they asked for, you know, they would ask for a load for Canada. And instead of giving them a load for Toronto, they gave them a load for Prince Edward Island or Vancouver. And the driver
right.
stupidly took it. And what I've taught our customers and even our shippers is, for God's sakes, have a shipping number. And we, from almost day one, we had a load number, and which we've carried through to this day. And we give customers that load confirmation number, and we've tried to train our customers. Not only should they have a shipping number, but for safety's sake, we will give you our load number. Do not give anybody that load unless they recite that number. That's your
yep.
safety net. And we've had a couple cases, believe it or not, and you talk about having horseshoes up your rear end, where we've had a driver go in to pick up a load, and this has happened a couple of times in South Florida. A driver goes in to pick up a load, and the shipper says, I don't have your load. I shipped it already. There was another truck.
Right.
And the carrier calls and says, what are you doing, Chuck, sending two trucks in for the same load? No,
right.
I wouldn't do that. So I find out. And we can't find the load, and it leaves on. It's picked up on a Monday, and it amazingly, what has happened is it gets delivered to the right people on Thursday or Friday, It's happened twice. And what's happened is you have a guy that unloads in Miami, and he calls his boss, especially this time of year when there's no freight in Miami, and he says to his boss, what do you got for me? Come back up home to Canada. The guy says, nothing. Go to the truck stop. The guy says, you know, I think I know a place that has freight. And he goes in, and he says, hi, have you got something for Canada? You know, it's a truck driver or an owner-operator trying to be a salesman, and the shipper says, yeah, I got your load door three. And the guy goes, yeah. And they don't know where to bill it, but we've had that happen a couple times, which was lucky. But we've had the other thing happen, too, where a customer gave our load to somebody else, never to be seen again. That's happened as well. And that's why the customers and the shippers have been, once that happens, they're very willing students to learn better protocols for shipping.
Well, you're exactly right.
I'm looking at the clock. I'm looking at the clock, and this hour is just absolutely long.
Wow,
by.
As ever.
And so, Jeff, I definitely would like to have you back on, but before we do wrapping up, can you give us maybe some practical things that we can do to kind of help make sure that we're doing as much as we possibly can not to be a victim of any type of cargo thefts or anything like that? Can you maybe give us some practical, just some quick, maybe five practical things that we might need to be more conscious of, especially like, you know, guys coming in, taking their 34-hour break or something like that, and maybe just, well, I'm just going to park it here at the truck stop or something like that. Just some practical things that we can do to kind of help alleviate maybe being victimized.
Sure. Well, probably the easiest thing is, and they're throughout the country, is always try to park your rig, and especially if you've got a load of value, park your rig in a secured yard. They're all over the country. But I realize a lot of things are out of convenience, and if it's convenient that you pull in a truck stop and then the truck stop's full, so you park on the side street, try to avoid that, but always use a kingpin lock if you can. Glad hands locks are also good, you know, for your brake lines. And one of the areas I was going to piggyback on that Chuck mentioned a while ago about the driver will stop. He's got a load, and he's tired, and he wants to go in and eat and have a shower, which he has to do. And that's true. There's very little a guy can do about that other than what we just talked about. If you're at a truck stop, obviously it's not a secured yard. But, you know, if you can put a kingpin lock on, if that applies, that's fine. Try to park close to a fuel island so you've got CCTV coverage. Because if it's out remote in the lot, there's no truck stop I know of in the country that's got CCTV surveillance camera coverage out in their parking lots. But
right.
If you've got team drivers, there's team drivers for a reason. And that reason is that the freight should never be left unattended. That's why you have team drivers. But what happens is that you might have some guys that have made a number of successful team driver runs with that an issue. So when they pull in, they go, oh, hell, let's go and grab something to eat and want to take a shower, and they leave the rig unattended. And that, I mean, case after case, well, I've taken guys' statements, and they tell me one thing. I said, okay, let's go back and let's try this again. Now tell me, did you guys leave the rig unattended? And they go, well, yeah, we did. Because, I mean, it's a big difference, you know, being charged with or being responsible for the loss of a $250,000 load or you just messed up on procedures. Big, big difference. So it's important that if you have team drivers, that protocol is there for a reason. That means one of you guys, the team drivers or gals, is always in the truck at all times. Whether one goes in and showers and the other stays in the truck. That's the reason for team drivers. And we see it a lot where, even though there's signed protocol, that a lot of drivers don't even pay attention to that. Or if they do, they don't adhere to it. So that's another way that could really, really cut down because, you know, team drivers are used usually only for high value loads or maybe not a high value load, but maybe you might have a commodity that's maybe not real high dollar value, but it's a very, very hot commodity on the market. So
right.
Its value, you know, is very, very high just because of its popularity. But also understand what a secured yard is. It's funny when I go to different places. I was up in Canada not so long ago, and a guy told me what a secure yard was. I went and looked at it, and I had to laugh. It was like a car dealership building that had lights and a pipe fence around it, you know, that's about 3 feet off the ground.
Right.
But you know,
right.
A secured yard means gated, guarded lighting.
Right.
So understand that. And I get it that a lot of times a driver is all out of convenience or tired. They just want to park the rig and get home. But always try to park, you know, in like a secured yard. And if you get one that meets all that criteria, fence, gated, guarded, lighted, you're probably not going to experience a theft.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, I want to add something to what you said. When you have, and it's been our experience, when you have loads, when you pick up loads and you're a team and you pick up a load of high-value electronics and you're, you know, you have that protocol you've signed off that one driver must stay with the truck at all times, we have heard of cases where these gangs are affiliated with people that work loading these trucks, and they know what they're looking for, and they're following these trucks. And I've heard of stories where these trucks are getting stolen when both drivers, they pick up a load in Southern California, and both drivers end up in Little America in Wyoming, and they figure, well, it's Little America. Nobody's going to steal anything here. They go in together for showers and for food, and they come out, and their truck is gone. So they may very well be following you. You don't know it. And they have your license number and the truck number.
Well, like in that case I was saying about earlier, the guys on the, when they have the $800 or the $8 million cell phone, they followed that truck for 750 miles from Brandon, California to Long, New Mexico. So, no, you're right. I mean, I've seen it a lot where, and usually you can usually tell. I've had a lot of cases. I had one in Tampa one time where a guy picked up and they switched drivers like in Ocala, and then he got back up to his yard in St. Petersburg and parked his truck, and within 3 hours it was gone. Well, my client or the assured thought, well, that driver, he's dirty. And I said, well, I'm not so sure about that. And I went and met with the driver and then asked him where his stops are at, and he told me the certain truck stop he stopped at. And I said, well, that's a known place where trucks are followed. So I said, well, you go down with him tomorrow, we'll get the video, and I'll prove to you got followed from there. He went down there with me. We got the video. Sure enough, showed his truck, showed three vehicles following him. The driver had nothing to do with it. And that, a lot of times it's always like, well, the driver's involved, or he's a dirty driver. I find it more often than not that it's not a dirty driver, that the driver is just, he might have been a bit careless, or he might have been a bit unassuming, but he's not a thief. He just, you know,
yeah.
And that,
yeah.
That's just the truth of it.
No,
right.
That's their living.
Well, Jeff,
you know,
we definitely want to try to have you back on, because this hour, I don't think, I tell you, just really blew by. Would you like to give out any contact information for if somebody wanted to maybe, I don't know if you want to do that or not, you can, if you want to leave your contact information on the recording, but if not, I understand that as well. I don't know if you want your phone, but, you know, with a bunch of random phone calls.
But what might be best would just be put the email address out there. You know, I can give that to you right now. If you want to put out it, it's jeff@trmus.com. jeff@trmus.com. Because that way, because, you know, with
okay.
We get enough crazy calls anymore with solicitors all the time.
Right.
But email would probably be the best way to go. And I'd be more than happy to, like I said, you know, I deal with truckers, I deal with brokers, I deal with shippers, the whole gamut. And that's why I have a lot of sympathy for the people who move freight, the truckers. I mean, it's so often I hear, like, from a lot of times the assured will say, well, you know, it's that driver, I think he's dirty. And you go meet with the guy, and they're like, man, this guy was shaking. This guy was scared shitless.
Yeah.
I mean, all these guys, you know, they look at it from, you have to look at their perspective. Once they realize that, like, in a case where they've been followed, they still think, wait a minute, that guy's been following me? Somebody followed me into a store?
Right.
And they had their eyes on me, and they had somebody else around me. They start to get the jitters. It kind of freaks them out, especially if they've never experienced a cargo theft before.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Chuck, real quickly, tell the people how they can get in contact with you really quickly.
Okay. They can call me at 800-388-4352. Extension 203. Got to press that extension 203 or you're never going to get me. And you can get me on email, chuck@traffix.com, or you can get me on Instagram, Chuck Snow CEO. Just reach out to me if you need help with something. I'd be glad to help you, put you in touch with the right people. If you need us to get you hooked up with traffics for freight, go through me and I'll put you in the right direction and I'll hold your hand and get you all set up.
Good deal. Well, we want to thank you guys, the listeners, for taking your time out listening to the podcast tonight. Tell a friend to tell a friend. For Rico, for Jeff Hall, Chuck Snow, this is Rico Muhammad signing out. God bless you. Good night.
Catch.
Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank
Catch
you
on the flip-flop.
Thank you.
Good night. God bless.
Bye-bye.